Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Israel agrees to a pause in fighting in return for the release of hostages taken by Hamas. But who is really getting the raw end of the deal here? And is this ceasefire light in Israel's strategic interest? Let's jump into it. Plus, the Biden presidency is a dumpster fire, an inferno of disaster, a steaming pile of incompetence with a sigh of dementia and a sprinkle of classified documents and a pinch of foreign business shakedowns. So why the actual hell do the puppeteers over at the DNC continue to stick their hands in the Brandon puppet? Breitbart's Alex Marlowe returns to break it down. And also tonight, an unvaxxed former Green Beret roasts the Biden regime for their piss-poor and too little, too late efforts to bring back unvaccinated and myocarditis free service members. Captain John Franklin joins me with his uncensored message. Last but not least, you know I have some final thoughts, and it all starts now.
What's up, everyone? It's Nick Wright, and I got something exciting to talk to you about today. Angie, your ultimate destination for getting all your jobs done well. Now, Angie isn't just your average home services marketplace. It's a game changer. With over 150 million homeowners served and a network of over 200,000 skilled pros, Angie has experience and expertise to tackle any project with ease. Whether you're looking to spruce up your backyard or undergo a major home renovation, Angie's got your back. And their pros are locally based, often running small businesses right in your community. And here's the best part. Angie makes the process seamless, from researching and comparing pros to scheduling services at your convenience. Angie's user-friendly platform puts you in control. So why settle for anything less than perfection when it comes to your home? With Angie, you can trust every project will be completed with the utmost care and professionalism. So get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today to discover why homeowners across the nation are turning to Angie to get all their jobs done well.
Today marks the fourth day of the truce, or as I call it, ceasefire light between Israel and Hamas. This truce came about after immense and understandable pressure from the families of the hostages taken by Hamas on October 7th. The deal, though, seems shaky at best. The rule of thumb is do not negotiate with terrorists, but here we are. In exchange for a slow trickle of hostages, Hamas not only gets a pause from Israel's beatdown, they also get their own political prisoners in the swap. Oh, except they've gotten at least 117 hostages returned compared to Israel's 60 or so returned hostages so far. So let's be honest, this is a win for Hamas. And while you can't put a price on the return of hostages of women and children who've been locked up and traumatized for nearly 2 months, I fear this ceasefire light will only embolden Hamas and their backers in Iran. Why would Hamas stop taking hostages if this is the sweetheart deal they get when they do? This is a bad precedent, and it also signals to the world that these free Palestine global protests that are almost all at least partially anti-Semitic in nature have worked and will keep working. And that's my fear. When you negotiate with terrorists, do not expect it to go well. Joining me now with his take on that and so much more is Breitbart editor-in-chief and author of Breaking Biden, Alex Marlowe. Alex, I want to jump right into this. This has been obviously the news of the holiday, has been the ceasefire light, as I call it. And I know that it's probably controversial to criticize it, given the fact that Israel is getting hostages back. Yesterday, a four-year-old little girl released. But I just feel like in the long run, this is not the right precedent to send. What's your thought?
Yeah, I think overall you're right, Tommy. And thanks again for having me back. Biden, first of all, we always forget that his foreign policy is why this happened. His attacks in the Middle East have been just terrible. He's emboldened Hamas, particularly by sending money to the Palestinians, which we're still doing. We're still doing this, which is insane to me. He's appeased Iran. He's wanted to restart the Iran nuclear deal, and his botched withdrawal of Afghanistan didn't just send a signal of weakness. It left billions of dollars worth of weapons in the hands of terrorists who are either going to use it or sell them to other terrorists. And that's something that I document in great detail in the book. So Biden bears a lot of blame. He's doing a couple of things right here, basically, by sending a signal to Israel that we're with them on the world stage. But he says the right stuff sometimes. He still keeps appeasing Iran, sending money to the Palestinians. And he's also hinting that Israel needs to be restrained, which is just such a signal to the worst people in the region that if they just bide their time enough, then they can get loaded up with arms from their friends, even money from America in some cases. And they'll be able to fend off Israel's attack. Israel's by far the superior military, and they're morally righteous in the fact that they were the ones attacked, and they're the ones who the world is openly talking about wiping off the map. And that is something that needs to be repeated over and over, because it feels like it's gotten lost in the American dialogue. I will say, in terms of the hostages, that the Palestinians, Hamas, they were very clear, I think, in what they were going to do with these hostages from the start, is they were going to release them at a moment where they could buy themselves some good press. So we will live and die in American media on which hostages are coming home. Are they coming home? It's very effective and manipulative. So keeping hostages around allows them the opportunity to release them strategically to make it seem as though they're the reasonable ones in the relationship, which is completely absurd given the attacks on 10/7.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Obviously, there's going to be news coverage of the hostages being released. Yesterday, the four-year-old little girl, I understand. I mean, that certainly is newsworthy. But you're exactly right, because when we talk about the hostages coming home and it's a very heartwarming, feel-good thing, then we lose sight of the fact that what they did on October 7th was a terrorist attack, that they'll likely do it again, and that the ceasefire light that apparently is going to be extended for at least another 2 days only allows Hamas to rebuild themselves, allows them to get their own hostages or their political prisoners back, many of whom are going to probably rejoin the fight. So it doesn't feel like in the long term this is going to be a strategic victory for Israel. But you brought up Joe Biden, so I want to take a listen and get your thoughts. Yeah. Because according to Joe Biden, he was just right on the cusp of solving the Middle East crisis, and he was about to bring peace to the region, and that's why this all happened. Let's take a listen to our president, and then I want your critique of his own analysis.
Let me back up. I cannot prove what I'm about to say, but I believe one of the reasons why Hamas struck when they did was they knew that I was working very closely with the Saudis and others in the region to bring peace to the region by having recognition of Israel and Israel's right to exist.
So, Alex, he can't prove what he said, but he is saying that he was just right on the verge there of bringing peace to the Middle East. What's your take? Do you think we were almost there?
No, absolutely not. We are going the wrong direction. This is a spot where Trump's foreign policy was very excellent, and there was increasing peace in the region thanks to the Abraham Accords and other moves, which some of it wasn't even overly complicated. It was just getting people to work together economically in the region was a net benefit for everyone. Biden did all that just to spite Trump. The discussion of moving the embassies around, all of that is something that inflames tensions in the area. So no, Joe Biden has nothing to do with any peace. Just look at what's happening in the United States, where you've got places like in the U.S., you've got rampant anti-Semitism in places like New York City, which is a huge, large Jewish population. You've got anti-Semitism on campus. You've got increasing generations of younger people who see a moral equivalence between Israel and the people who want to wipe it off the map. Joe Biden's been a failure on this issue, and that's why he can't back it up with anything, because there's nothing to it. Tommy, can I add one more thing about the hostages? Of course, the children and women are ultimately going to get released because of the good PR. What would be a real breakthrough if any young men of fighting age got released? That's where I'm not holding my breath, because Hamas is being tactful in that regard, that they know they get a good PR for releasing women and children who are, it's so monstrous to kill them anyway. And then so long as they do that, we're actually playing into their hands. Of course, I want them all released. Obviously, I want everyone released. But them specifically releasing the most sympathetic people is manipulating American media. So just be conscious as that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of PR campaigns and propaganda campaigns. You brought up American students and you brought up Americans. I mean, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, really all throughout the weekend, more blocking of traffic, more Free Palestine, anti-Israel protests across the nation. Then you've got this horrible scene in a school in Queens where you've got a teacher who attended a pro-Israel rally being barricaded in her room as these wildebeest, feral creatures seem to rally outside. We have the video that we're going to play for folks in case they missed it. It's obviously gone viral on social media. But what do you make of this propaganda campaign, and why are young Americans so stupid? I know that's a loaded question, but do your best to help me figure it out.
Yeah. So the shocking detail here is that she was targeted not for what she was doing within the classroom, but for her activism outside of school. So the student should not be allowed or even encouraged to riot against a teacher for her viewpoints off of campus. It's none of their business. If you want to go through school and only have people who agree with you, first of all, that's impossible. And second of all, why would we send people to school with that expectation that you're only going to get the exact viewpoint that you hold if you're a student? It is the coddling of snowflakes that's the result of this. Left-wing students being told that any sort of a viewpoint that's not their own is violence, is why we have this, because that justifies their violence in retaliation. And it's not even the viewpoint that's vocalized in the school, it's outside the school activity. We used to be a tolerant people, and now the left are the intolerant ones who are saying, you disagree with me, then we will make your lives miserable even away from school.
But Alex, do you really even think they understand the complexities of Israel and Hamas and Palestine in the Middle East? Or do you think these are just feral animals who want to act out and they want an excuse to smash things, to attack their teacher, to parade around in the hallways instead of being in class and being educated? Because to me, when I look at a lot of these protesters, I don't see people that understand foreign policy and really believe in the plight or the Palestinian people and their efforts and their struggle. I see people who want to go buck wild and have an excuse to do just that. And whether it's BLM or Occupy Wall Street or climate change or Free Palestine, all of these people look similar to me. Now, of course, there are some that truly are just anti-Semitic and anti-Israel, but I don't think that's the bulk. Do you agree with that assessment? Yeah. Or do you think that that's what we're seeing here is truly people that understand the complexities of foreign policy?
No, of course not. A lot of people are frustrated, young people who are trying to find where their place in the world is. And a lot of them are very frustrated and they do act out. This has always been the case. And it does feel like it's being encouraged in recent years where, as a country, we've gone out of our way to legitimize certain types of violence. The entire political left legitimized all the Black Lives Matter riots in 2020 as if they were legitimate political protests. Of course, they weren't. And yet that's what we were told over and over. So I do think you're observing something that is accelerating, which is the legitimizing of political violence as younger people just basically blow off steam. But we also have the social media culture where no one can miss an opportunity to take a stand. And there's no reward for any nuance. There's no reward for anyone having an opinion that you could even back up in an argument. Debate is out, and taking a bold stand, being the most emotional about your positions is what's in right now. Very toxic. And we got to get past it very quick if we want to have a country.
Well, one of the ways to get past it, you know, those folks that wanted to disrupt the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, gluing their hands to the cement. I mean, you let Turkey Tom just roll over them a few times, and then I think you solve that problem there. I'm all for that one. Controversial, whatever, I don't care. You're going to glue your hand to the street, you have to accept the consequences. But I want to move now to 2024, Biden-Harris. Democrats don't want Joe. Top Democrats are saying they don't want Joe. It's almost like they're stuck with him, or maybe they're not. I'm not sure what that timetable looks like to throw him completely under the bus. But I did see a poll that shows that despite the fact that Kamala's this approval rating is so low, Democrats still want her as the running mate. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that is very odd to me. I think they might see that throwing her off is impossible. So they couldn't throw her off and replace her with a Gavin Newsom, who's a cis hetero white male. I say that somewhat tongue in cheek, but it actually is how the left classifies him. You can't throw him off for Pete Buttigieg, who's actually been at least as bad as she is and is another white male privilege. So even though he is some woke points because of his homosexuality, but not as many as Kamala does. She's got huge access to donor money. She has got that BIPOC woman credibility, which is more important than competence on the left right now. It's just a fact that it is. So I don't really know who's the vice president that would add to the ticket for Joe more than Kamala does, even though she's clearly terrible at her job. She's not alienating to anyone on the left. She hasn't crossed anyone on the left. And remember, when we're talking about the Democrat Party, it really is a giant machine that operates with these big goals in mind. And I don't think Kamala takes away from their broader goals. So it is kind of surprising to me, I have to admit, that people are okay with her. You would think they'd be a little more creative than just put the same tickets doing so terrible out there. But I do think that's what's happening.
I still don't think Joe is going to be the nominee, but I know that time is ticking to replace him. So I'm wondering if you think that that is going to happen, if you think someone is going to take his place. And if that doesn't happen, does that signal to Americans that the Democrats are so confident in their electioneering strategies that they don't really care that the top of their ticket is a dementia-ridden vegetable?
Yeah, that's the latter, certainly. I think Joe's going to be the nominee. I've thought so since before I started researching Breaking Biden. I had a hypothesis that he has a machine that he built over 50 years where he's insulated himself so that he pulls so many levers for so many people that he's not going to get pushed aside. He also isn't just ambitious in the sense that he wants to be president. He wants to be a dynastic figure. And his whole intention, his whole life, was to be able to pass off his dynasty to an heir. Hopefully that was for him going to be Beau Biden, but Beau passed away of cancer. Biden doesn't have a natural heir. So long as that's an unsolved part of Biden's story, I think there's no chance he's going to step aside. And I don't know who's going to force him aside and for whom. Gavin Newsom is not a good governor. I'm a California resident, and he's the only possible person right now who could step in. There's talk of Hillary Clinton, but you know, she's doing some goofball masterclass right now. She's doing all this goofy stuff online. She's becoming a meme intentionally, trying to make money. She's, you know, doing some light teaching gigs. She's not being a serious person right now. She could have vied for that, but she's not acting like it. Michelle Obama could do it, but I don't think she likes this country, much less want to be president of it. So it's who are they going to put in there? I don't have any idea. And Biden's certainly not going to allow for it. So that's my take until I see some new evidence.
I disagree on the Gavin Newsom point. I also lived in California. I know it's awful, but unfortunately, he's got good hair and he's a smooth talker. We're going to see more of that later this week in the DeSantis-Newsom debate. So I'm very excited to see that. But I do think
I want to caveat it. I think Newsom is going for 2028. I think he's positioning himself, knowing what I said about Joe. Oh, Joe is no heir. I think that's why they're acting like they're bestie friends. I think Newsom thinks he's got a cakewalk in 2028, and that's where he's on. That's just my hot take, but it's based on a lot of analysis.
Yeah, no, I mean, I take your analysis very seriously. I do think, though, Republicans are far too confident, overly confident, and I think it's going to actually be an Achilles heel, the overconfidence of Republicans, once again, saying that, oh, Trump is going to beat Biden in 5 of 6 swing states. Oh, my God, Biden's awful. Nobody likes Biden. 75% of Americans don't want Biden to run. That means Trump is going to sail to an easy victory. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's a horrible message to send out. I'm sick of people talking about a red wave. I don't see a red wave. I don't see even a tiny little pink wave. Do you think that this is going to be an issue headed into 2024, people thinking that Trump's just going to have it easy?
Absolutely massive issue. And we post all the polls at Breitbart.com. And I thank everyone for going to Breitbart.com and downloading the Breitbart app and refreshing it all day, 3-4 times a day to get all the latest. It's the best way to stay informed. And we cover all of them, Tommy, but I'm 100% with you. We have no reason to be cocky. The Democrats' electioneering strategy is improving by the minute. They got Joe 80 million votes last time. If you don't think they've got that as their bare minimum number this time in mind, then you're kidding yourself. And it's just going to get more sophisticated with their search engine manipulation, with the media, with AI. All of these are going to work and be deployed on Joe's behalf because he benefits all of the corporate status quo. Almost every major corporation, this company is behind Joe Biden, and their pockets are open. I read story after story how Republican donors are going to be more stingy this year. You see very few conservative-based startup businesses. All you're seeing is the Democrats funneling and pumping tons and tons of money in the Biden apparatus and into their electioneering strategy. This is a grave 5-alarm fire for the Republicans. If we're not going to take this part seriously of the election process, then trust me, Joe will figure out a way to win.
So I don't want to dismiss the efforts of certain folks out there on the ground, like a Scott Pressler, who are working for every single vote,
great stuff.
Talking about early voting, talking about mail-in voting, talking about ballot harvesting where it's legal. I think that's important. But I think even if Republicans get in the game, I think we're arriving to the game late. And I'm not sure even if Republicans play the game that we can play the game like Democrats play the game. I'm not sure we have it in us, and I'm not sure if we have the infrastructure to do it. Even with folks like Scott Pressler and others on the ground working very hard for it, I don't think it's going to be anytime soon that we're going to be able to match their power.
Yeah, I think you're right, unfortunately, but it doesn't mean we can't try, because our ideas are better, and we are improving in some ways. Conservative media is a juggernaut now, which when I started with Andrew Breitbart as the first employee of Breitbart 15 years ago, there was none of us. And now there's tons of competition, lots of great reporting. We're funnier, we're better looking, we have better memes. We're a part of the culture, not as much as we should be, but conservatives are a factor in the culture. You can speak to that personally, Tommy. So there are some positives, it's not all negative, but we are getting our butts kicked in terms of donor class, consulting class strategy, where they are thinking of it as a massive industry and institution to get out the vote effort. And we've got Scott Pressler, and we've got, I know, Turning Point's making an effort for this year. I mean, but there's very few places that are trying to get the vote out on a door-to-door grassroots level. I was walking around Beverly Hills yesterday, and you see this drop box there, and there's no reason anyone in that neighborhood will have any problem turning in votes. The Democrats don't care. They don't care. They're going to put drop boxes everywhere. They want it as easy as possible for the lowest information people to turn in ballots with Democrat markings on them. This is as dire of a warning as I can give, not just to people in your audience, Tommy, who I know are engaged, but also people who might have a little money in their bank account, might have a little time in their hands. You have to donate. You have to back people who you care about. You have to get involved at a bigger level than this, just showing up to vote. It's not simply enough to talk to your friends and family and then vote properly. You have to be activated at this time.
Let's talk about the donor class, though. Do you think that there's a part of this that big donors, they don't want to throw their money into 2024 because they think Donald Trump is going to be the nominee, and they feel like with four indictments and countless legal battles he's going to be fighting throughout the primary and election process, that giving their money to a Trump candidate, Trump himself or a Trump-endorsed candidate, is essentially throwing their money away? Do you think that that's a part of this, that it's not the same excitement? Or another half of that could be they don't want to donate to Donald Trump because there's such a stigma that's associated with that. Maybe not like it would be donating to a DeSantis or a Nikki Haley or even a Vivek or any of the others. Do you think that that's part of this? The Trump in the room is dissuading people from getting as involved financially as maybe they would otherwise?
Yeah, I think that is true. There's no doubt that there's going to be certain people who see Trump's legal record, they see his personality, and they're going to think, I'm going to keep my money out of it. I think we're seeing that. I think that's been, it's been reported. I don't think we're breaking a lot of ground here making that point. But I do hope people, after the primary is over, people get over it and realize that Joe Biden is an existential threat to this country if he continues to be president. And not to mention, if people are not engaged at a accelerated level, the down ticket is going to be very bad. And a lot of those people, if you love Trump, or if you don't like Trump, a lot of them are their own independent people, and they're the rising stars in the conservative movement. And we can't abandon them. But it's not just political stuff, Tommy. It's also activism. It's also media. It's also subscribing to your favorite places that are producing content you like, thought leaders, trying to support people who are in the cause and in it for the right reasons. So it goes beyond just political donations. But yeah, it's of course a concern that a lot of Republican money will stay out because they don't like Trump. I don't know why they don't like Trump. Some of them probably good reasons. Some of them probably less good reasons. But yes, certainly that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think if we do want to win in 2024, not just whoever our nominee is, but like you said, down ballot, I think we focus on the economy, and I think we focus on parents, because I think that a lot of parents in 2020 got really fired up over the COVID mandates. I think they got fired up again when all of this LGBTQ stuff in classrooms started hitting a fever pitch. So I think if we focus on those two things, we get the emotional aspect, we get the economy, which is always important. I think we need to shut up about pro-life. Sorry, pro-lifers. I think we need to shut up about it, and I think we need to talk maybe a little bit less about Donald Trump because he's so polarizing. If you lead with that, I think you lose a lot of people along the way. But those are just my two thoughts on that. My best advice in talking to a lot of people. You talk to a lot of people. You do a lot of polls. You run a website. I know you know this, but just in talking, especially to young women, I'm just feeling like that's got to be the way we go.
One of the big problems the conservatives have right now is there's this new class of voter that's emerging that's voting as a block the same way that a lot of minorities would have voted in the past, which is career women who are unmarried. And these women, particularly white ones, are new to this automatic voting Democrat thing. And this is something that's a big concern. And I got to tell you, Tommy, I'm very cynical on this. We're not going to solve this group of people in the next year. So they're going to vote as a block for Democrats. But this is a new element of our society that Republicans, we have nothing in our messaging for this group of people. And that's just something I'm not saying that I'm incredibly pro-life. I'm very happy with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. But there's no doubt that this group of people don't want to hear about abortion anymore. They don't want to hear about it. They're pro-choice. And we're not going to convince them in the next year. I would love to convince them over time. But in terms of being a political analyst, that issue is not working with that group of people. And that group of people are going to lose. The Bidenomics stuff is going to work. The more we talk about the economy, the more the people that are reminded about the Bidenflation, they're reminded about why their groceries cost so much, why their gas costs so much, why cars are up, 30%. This type of stuff affects people's lives. And not to mention, try to buy a home now if you're a first-time home buyer, you're going to get crushed. All of this stuff people see, and it will work as an issue much more effectively than a lot of the other stuff that I care about on a personal level, but might not convince those swing voters. So you're right to be conscious of that at this point.
Yeah, I think three names are going to be a problem if we overuse them: Roe, Wade, Trump. So I think we should maybe stay away from those three if we'd like to win anything. That doesn't mean I don't support Trump. I just think talking about Trump and 2024 being all about Trump, I think, is a big mistake. So I'm just going to say
that. Can I ask you your viewpoint in terms of, I do think people have mostly made up their mind about Trump. What do you think the establishment media is going to do? Because I feel like they're going to try to ignore him unless they're talking about his trials. But maybe talking about him would be effective in your mind?
I don't think so. I think that people have already made up their mind about Donald Trump. And there are some people, regardless of how bad this economy gets, no matter if groceries, strawberries start costing $15 a carton, they will not vote for Donald Trump. They will never vote for Donald Trump. They hate Donald Trump. It's such a visceral reaction. And I wish that that were not the case, but I have to talk about reality, not idealism. So I think that that's a big mistake. I think that we take the Trump part out of it and talk about the policy, and we talk about freedom, and we talk about being able to afford things. And I think that that's got to be the way that we go. Now, you can still vote for Donald Trump, and that can still be the top of your ticket if that ends up being the way it is. But I think focusing on this Make America Great Again thing, it's not 2016 anymore. We got to move away from it, or I think we're just going to lose badly.
And it's going to be on Donald Trump in all likelihood in order to make that point to people that you might love me, a lot of people love me, a lot of people don't love me, but the bottom line is these issues, is that Joe's done a terrible job. Middle East was stable. Now it's not. The inflation was low. Now it's not. If he makes those points, I think he could get a lot of people who don't like him, but don't like Joe as well. But that is a very interesting point, that if it's a personality contest, that's not going to be a good strategy. I agree with you. That's not going to be an optimal strategy for Trump, for sure, no matter what else is going on in the world.
Well, we can agree on that, and best of luck to us, because we've got a country to save and we're playing Russian roulette, which doesn't make me feel comfortable. But we fight on anyway. Alex, thank you. As always, your book, Breaking Biden, obviously great reviews. I mean, you've done such a deep dive in everything that you've done in exposing the Biden family corruption and more. So I encourage everybody to get that as a Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever holiday you celebrate gift. And also check out Breitbart.com. You guys do a fantastic job. Thank you so much for being with me once again.
It means a lot. I'd love to come back soon.
All right. Thanks, Alex. All right. From one dumpster fire to the next, as we face international conflicts and potential wars on all fronts, including our northern and southern border, Joe and co are begging military members to come back after he canned them over their refusal to get the COVID vax, the one that doesn't prevent infection or spread, and the mandate that was enacted not for health, but to appease donors and dictators over at Big Pharma, Inc. Well, now what? Now the Brandon regime wants a do-over so these previously discarded and unvaccinated service members will consider coming back to fight his wars. That should go over well. One of these service members is former Green Beret and Army Captain John Frankman, and he's telling Joe to shove it. He joins me now. John, I want to thank you so much for not only blowing the whistle, throwing the flag on this, but also joining me today to talk about, I guess, what the Biden regime is referring to is maybe a little oopsie. They have wars to fight, and they want strong young men like yourself to make sure that they come back to fight those fights, even though they previously wanted to discard you for not getting the vaccine. You know, when you saw that, the pleading to please return, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts were just how absolutely out of touch this letter was. I don't think that people really understand what service members went through. And I had it pretty good, but a lot of other service members, they were quarantined for extended periods of time. They weren't allowed to go into dining facilities. They weren't allowed to go into gyms. Some people were restricted to their ships, not able to go to religious services. So to send out a letter without even having an apology, without having any kind of accountability, there's no way that they're going to get service members back from that. And there is no policy change actually offered by this letter. It just says you can apply to get your discharge status elevated, which most people received a general, which means that you don't have GI Bill benefits. You can't go to college. It means that you are known as having committed a serious offense. So the reason that it's just crazy that they won't automatically upgrade these discharges, and no one's going to join because of it.
Yeah, no one's going to join. I can't imagine what it feels like for people like yourself who signed up to protect and defend, maybe even die for this country, and to be discarded and thrown by the wayside because you refused to get an experimental vaccine. I know that military members get a lot of vaccines, and I'm sure that that's unpleasant. But this one, to me, seemed a little different, and I think the resistance to this particular vaccine was a little different than most. Can you explain to me why you chose not to get vaccinated?
Sure. I mean, first and foremost, I'm a Catholic. And before going on active duty in the military, I actually spent 4 years studying to become a Catholic priest. So as a Catholic, I understood that these shots, they all were using aborted fetal cells in either the creation or the testing. So at first, that made me hesitant to decide to get them. So I knew I would at least wait until the vaccine was mandatory. But as we learned more and more about the shots, we learned that it's not really good for health. We knew there were side effects, especially in young men, for heart issues. We looked into the legality of the actual order, and it was illegal. There was no FDA-approved shot available. And in order for the Secretary of Defense to order us to take a shot, it needs to be FDA-approved. So just for different religious reasons, mostly was the reason why I chose not to get this, because it went against my faith and my First Amendment religious rights, which I'm trying to fight to defend.
Let's talk about the religious exemption, though, because I know several people who tried that religious exemption. I believe that you also considered doing that. Why did you choose not to do that? And if you did put in for that religious exemption, do you think that it would have been accepted?
So I put in for a religious exemption, and I put it in early October of 2021, and it was never answered. So December of 2022 is when the mandate was rescinded because Congress kind of stepped up, very barely stepped up to kind of throw that particular order out. And I know it would not have been accepted because they were kind of all totally being dismissed. So people's exemptions were being denied. Their appeals were being denied. People were being kicked out for it. So there were over 8,000 service members who were discharged from the military for refusing the COVID shot. Those were outright refusals. And those were also people who had their exemptions denied. And why I chose to voluntarily leave the military was because I didn't want to wait until my exemption was denied so that I would face a general discharge. I thought I might as well leave while I can when my commitment is up in order to try to preserve the honorable discharge. And because not being able to, when my religious exemption was pending, I couldn't deploy. I couldn't move on to different duty stations. I couldn't travel. That kept me from moving and progressing in my career. So I've decided, well, if they're going to continue to punish me for putting my religious exemption in, I might as well leave and try to save as much skin as I can.
Do you regret your decision not to get the vaccine, to leave the military? Is there any part of you that feels like you made the wrong choice?
Absolutely not. I did what I believe God wanted me to do. I followed my conscience. I did what was legal. I stood up for other men. And right now I'm able to stand up for other people in the service. And it's more than just the COVID shot. I think people need to see that this is just a small glimpse into kind of the government intrusion into our lives in many other areas. So I think those of us who kind of see what's going on and have the moral courage do need to stand up, need to do the right thing in order to preserve our nation. So I'm very proud of the things I've done. Even though I've gone to Ranger School, Special Forces Qualification Course, this is the proudest thing I've ever done in the military. And I thank God for the grace to have done it.
Wow. So what about your fellow service members that did choose to get the vaccine, not because they thought it would better their health, but because they felt that they were coerced or forced to get it to preserve their career, to preserve their service to this nation? Did they tell you that they regret getting that vaccine? And if so, why?
So there are some who have come up and they have commended me for the decision I've made. They wish that they haven't gotten it. I've had a number of individuals who have told me about some medical side effects that they've had. And there's one specialist I met with who, after getting two Moderna, she's had three heart attacks, a stroke, and other issues, and she's only 23. But for those people who kind of went along to get along, who didn't want to sacrifice their career, who wanted to continue progression for whatever reason, I would say you need to stand up. You need to look at whether that order is legal or not. I think there are more people who, having this have happened to them already and seeing that the shots aren't effective at all, that this mandate was rescinded anyway, I think there will be more moral courage going forward. But I would just urge all those people to just prayerfully resist whatever future illegal mandates come down this path, or else we're going to continue to have these tyrannical rules being put over us. And just because you're in the military doesn't mean you need to take every shot that you're made to take. You still have religious freedoms. You still have other legal precedents, which the military abused those legal appeals. So continue to fight.
And what are you doing now in terms of trying to change things? I know that you're reaching out to members of Congress to try to correct this, or at least down the road make some changes, affect change in a positive manner. Tell me about those discussions and those that you've talked to, and if you've been warmly received and we might see some action taken on this in the future.
Right. So there's a few things I'm trying to do. One, I'm trying to raise awareness, and the American people need to be made known of how terribly service members were mistreated, how they were coerced into trying to get this experimental shot. So raising awareness for one, but also trying to get congressional hearings and get different amendments to the National Defense Authorization Act. So those hearings should be through the House Armed Service Committee, COVID Select Committee, through weaponization of the government, because I do believe this was weaponized against conservatives. And we need this in order to get accountability. Lloyd Austin, we need to know what he knew and when he knew it with regards to whether the shot was legal or not. It was not, because there was no FDA-approved shot, at least for the first year after the mandate was put in. We need to look into the COVID injuries to figure out whether we give these service members these shots later on. So looking into all of the different legal minutiae of that, who was responsible for what, the coercive techniques that were put in, and then different amendments to give restitution to service members. People don't realize it, but right now, 70% of the service members, I think around that number, who were kicked out have a general discharge. That's for a serious offense. It's crazy. All they were doing was following their conscience, following the law. So we need to raise those up. We need to get people back pay. We also need to get rid of their discharge status, make it so they can join back in the military. And we have so much training for sexual harassment, equal opportunity, DEI, online protection. Why don't we have some training for the Constitution, which we took an oath to support and defend? Why don't we put that in our annual training requirements? So there's a number of different things I'm trying to do. And as far as people who've been helpful, Senator Ron Johnson's definitely been leading the charge on the Senate side, was also able to meet with Ted Cruz, and he's pushing the Americans Act, which unfortunately a bunch of rhino, no good Republicans are kind of opposing. So I want to thank personally Mitt Romney for quitting. That's great. But on the Congress side, Thomas Massey's been fantastic, and he was the most proactive very early on. So I reached out to him in 2021 when still on active duty, very responsive, excellent, met with him recently. And then Matt Gaetz has been very helpful to me. He's my congressman. He helped me first get my op-ed published, which is what's kind of, I don't know, God's used to get this momentum, which is why I'm talking to you, which I would not have seen happening. So, yeah.
In closing, I want to talk about the future of the military beyond just the vaccine requirements and the low morale. Obviously, recruitment issues, a lot of the woke agenda has seeped into the military. What do you think the United States military looks like 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road?
I think a lot of that depends on who the next president is, because unfortunately, under Biden, under Lloyd Austin, the military has continued to get more and more woke, less and less lethal, less and less able to actually do its job, and less people have wanted to sign up. And who your leader is actually matters, and people need to be inspired by strong leaders. So unfortunately, I don't see the military getting stronger if we should continue to have President Biden. If Trump is reelected, I think that the military will get stronger. And I think he'll appoint some good generals to those different positions. So But I think the American people as well is one of the kind of issues. I think that younger generations, they don't love this country as much. They might be on their phones too much, not as physically fit. So trying to reinstill within families, within schools, those good American values. So the military is only going to be as good as the volunteer force that it has. And the volunteer force is only going to be able to recruit from this country and the kind of children that we have. So I think it's just an individual call for every person to try to improve themselves, improve their families, help their children out in order to strengthen the country, because we are in a position where it's good versus evil right now. We see what the left wants. We see what we're facing, the government tyranny going on against us. So really, we need to continue to fight. So my prayer is that we get some good leadership, people continue to reform their lives. But if not, it's not looking too good.
I agree with you. Also, it's going to be hard to fight any wars when you have young people who identify as Fox gender. But that's a discussion for another day. John, I appreciate your service. I appreciate you being outspoken on this, leading the charge, using your voice. And I'm happy that I can be a small part of the platform that you get to keep telling the story. Keep on, and God bless you.
Thanks so much, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. Border Patrol agents are inundated with illegals, but the real concern, not terrorism, not human trafficking or drug trafficking, but pronouns. Yes, pronouns. It's time for Final Thoughts. More illegals have flooded into this country since Biden took office than the population of 38 individual states. Last week, the Tucson sector reported 15,000 illegal crossings, the highest weekly total ever. Our border agents are being pulled off the line to reheat burritos and escort illegals to doctor's appointments. So this isn't just a crisis. It's a coordinated effort to overrun our country with the world's people, and likely not the best the world has to offer either. But if you thought Biden's DHS was going to take action, well, you'd be partially correct. Brandon is taking action, all right, to ensure that the people who have no legal right to be here are not misgendered by border agents. Yeah, no kidding. If you're an illegal immigrant, life is gravy. If you're a trans illegal immigrant, your life is the whole damn Thanksgiving feast. In 2021, Biden's regime announced that asylum claims made by those in the LGBTQ barbecue would take priority even above the rest of the illegal immigrant pack. And Kamala told us that homophobia and transphobia were in fact the root causes of migrants fleeing places like Guatemala. So it's really no surprise and really par for the course that Biden's DHS has issued official guidance to CBP agents to be sure to ask the illegals they encounter what their preferred delusions, pronouns are, to be sure to only use gender-neutral language on the job. A copy of this memo was released thanks to Heritage Foundation oversight, and it's titled Guide to Facilitating Effective Communication with Individuals Who Identify as LGBTQI+. Another aspect of this directive demands that agents not assume the gender of any of the illegals they encounter and to avoid using words like Mr., Mrs., Sir, or Ma'am. Because heaven forbid our agents, whose sworn duty it is to protect and defend our nation, accidentally misgender a person who has no legal right to be here at all. This is what it's come to. Terrorists crossing our border, millions more working the system to take advantage of the fruits of our labor, and the top Democrat in charge is worried about coddling the identity delusions of migrants. I propose we make it simple. No pronouns, just one simple adjective and one simple noun to encompass them all. Illegal immigrant. And as for our president, well, his pronouns are more/on, and 2025 cannot come soon enough. Those are my final thoughts from Nashville. God bless. And take care.